Welcome to the Authors Who Lead podcast. This podcast is dedicated to you, people who want to be inspired by authors, leaders, and the messages they share. This is such an important podcast to us because we help uncover what goes on behind the scenes when authors are writing their book. We talk about the process, we talk about where they get big ideas, and you can listen in on those conversations. We can't wait for you to join us, so let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome back. I'm so thrilled today to have a dear friend and coaching client, Dr. Crystal Lau. She grew up in Malaysia where utilizing modern medicine alongside traditional medicine is common. And after becoming a physician and practicing medicine in Australia, she got her MS degree in public health. She has two children and has chosen to follow her postpartum confinement practice for both of them. And Crystal believes that the future of health lies in combining our past and present knowledge about healing to meet the needs of our consistently evolving society moving forward. She's the author of the new book, Postpartum 30, which we're going to talk about today, how she's made those sort of blending those two worlds together. And I'm so thrilled to have you here on the show. Welcome to the show, Crystal.
Hi, Azul. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So what's amazing is that having guests on the show that were part of our programs is a celebration, because anytime someone finishes a manuscript or a book and gets it out there, it's a feat. It's an internal feat that the external world never sees. And so this is a time to be like vulnerable for us, because as authors, it's sometimes terrifying, even though we're doing the thing that everyone says, I wish I could do it. So one, I want to congratulate you, Crystal, because this is a big feat. But when let's talk a little bit about your book before we dive into how it came to be. Where did you get this idea of writing a book about postpartum and the sort of blending of these two worlds?
It first started off after I did my first confinement practice after my first kid. I was talking to my mom. I said, oh, I don't really know all these things, and I'm afraid I can't remember all these things, even if I have more children and if she's not able to come visit to help me carry out the confinement or month for me. I'm like, where am I going to get this information? And there's not really books out there, at least written for the Malaysian Chinese person who wants to practice this. So then I thought, oh, I guess I could do a little scrapbook, you know, Then I could just add little bits and bobs and then refer to it when the next kid comes along, and then eventually pass it down. But as usual, when I start a personal project, like trying to do a scrapbook, it just sits there. So it sat there and sat there. And then with my husband's work, we moved to Germany from the States. And then one day I thought, I really need to get this done. And I thought, instead of doing just a scrapbook, why not just write a proper book? Yeah. And that kind of led me down the search about for someone to help me write the book.
Yeah. And we'll get into that more too. So for people who don't understand, I think most of us understood that postpartum or the fourth trimester is the period after a child's born. But what is confinement? Because the word sounds a little scary. Ooh, put it in a box. So it doesn't sound, in the Western world, that doesn't sound like exciting. But the mission of recovering and being taken care of as a mother after your child's born, that sounds really intriguing. Tell us, what does it mean to this sort of Chinese practice or Malaysian practice of confinement after a child's born?
Yeah, so I'll start with the word confinement. That's something among Malaysians in general. So in Malaysia, we've got three main ethnic groups, the Malay, Chinese, and Indian. We have our own words for it, but in general, the English term for that recovery period after a woman gives birth, we just call it confinement. So it's interesting because I know confinement is jail time to the West.
Right.
And even looking up confinement, everything comes out about incarceration and things like that. But for us, confinement is actually, whenever we say it, the first thing I would say people on our side of the world think of is actually postpartum. So the conversation that goes around is, are you going to do confinement? Is your wife going to do confinement? Oh, how was your confinement? Oh, my confinement was great, or it was bad. And the reason confinement is because literally you're confined at home for 30 to 40 days. So hence the term confinement. But so I can't speak my mother tongue, yeah, which I've learned to own and be proud of, because that's fine. But the Mandarin term is 坐月子, which essentially the direct translation is sitting down for the entire month for that time. Yeah. So that's where confinement came about for us.
That's great. And the postpartum 30, the title of your book, is really around creating the integration of both Western practices and traditional Chinese Malaysian practices where there are certain things you do in order to nurture and take care of a mother. If you do that, the mother has a much better recovery. The child has a better chance of being taken care of because the mother is now being nurtured because you spent those 9 months or so caring and nurturing the child. How was it combining? Obviously, you have a Western medical background, combining these two principles, because there's probably some conflict to bring them together from both traditional and Western sort of philosophies. How was that kind of creating a system for postpartum care?
Yeah, I struggled initially because a lot of the, how would I put it, with the medical training that I had, I wouldn't say that I was specifically guided to say that, oh, well, Western or modern medicine is the way to go and traditional medicine or alternative or complementary therapies, who kind of thing, because how would I put it? I might have to restart that as well.
Let's go back.
Yeah.
Let me back up. Let's go back. So what is, let me rephrase the question. Postpartum 30, creating sort of a system where you can bring the two philosophies of modern and traditional cultural practices for after the child is born. What was your idea of creating that postpartum 30 and that you created in this book?
So I wanted to bring something traditional and cultural for my generation and the younger generation to follow if they choose to down the road. And I feel like it's something that should not become obsolete just because it's outdated, so to speak. And with my medical training, I would give props to the Australian training side, is they do encourage us to include our patients' cultural beliefs and traditional background in when we manage them. The best example is with the Torres Strait Islanders and the Aboriginal people in Australia. It's a huge thing to have a liaison officer come and attend like each patient care meeting, because we want to make sure even medications that we prescribe goes in line with their cultural beliefs of receiving this type of care. So I saw that through that training, I thought I should be able to take my cultural background with this postpartum recovery practice, the confinement, and blend it or make it work with the modern mom's needs and wants. And it was a struggle at first because the generational divide is there. And a lot of the women before me, that generation, they go, we don't question these things. We just do it as is. Or sometimes the guilt trip comes in where, fine, I told you not to wash your hair, but you want to do it anyway. So if you get pains and aches down the road, don't blame me because I tried to help you. that sort of thing. But so the big thing in my book was to have explanations for, say, for example, I want to tell my mom that, hey, I really want to wash my hair. I don't think that not washing my hair for 30 days feels really dirty and my scalp's not going to be healthy. It's going to be itchy. And there are explanations in my book that I feel people can use to then bridge that gap with their mother or mother-in-law and come to a common ground saying, okay, I understand why you don't want to wash your hair. That's fine. And the best part, I think, is I offer solutions that meet in the middle. So for me, what I did for both my confinement was I didn't wash my hair for 14 days or 2 weeks of the entire month. And then I washed my hair after that. So that actually made my mom happy that I followed the traditional part a little bit, but she also understood why I wouldn't follow it all the way through. And it made sense.
Yeah. So that's why the postpartum, because the confinement can last longer than 30 days, but in this modern era, 30 days is a reasonable amount of time for a mother to be sitting. Let's use that on being taken care of. And like, for example, those listening, well, why not wash your hair? There's Chinese principles about what you let in your scalp and in your pores. There's all these things that are really blended with science and traditional teachings. So that's really fascinating, because you're as a person who's married to a non-Malaysian person, your husband.
Yeah.
There's all these complications with bringing one family in and their traditional practices and bringing a casserole. You're like, wait a second, I'm not supposed to be eating all these wonderful things that happen in both cultures. I feel like you bridged the gap here. So let's talk about the practical parts of writing a book and what you're planning to do with it, because being a doctor, that seems a very clear path. You get a practice or you work at a hospital or a clinic versus now you wrote this book about this practice and there's a shift going on. So we're going to talk about that shift in just a moment. Let's start it with the writing process. What was it like for you starting out? Did you know this is where you were going when you started or did it shift? And talk about anything that came up for you as you were writing.
Oh, a huge shift. Initially, I thought it was just going to be a very simple PDF ebook with just point form explanations on topics I wanted to talk about. And I was just going to give it out for free because I thought, hey, if I'm trying to branch out of medicine or make my own path away from clinical work, I was following people like Pat Flynn and Amy Porterfield. And I thought, okay, I just got to get myself out there, put the website, just do things while I figure out the practical things on how to really shift away from medicine. So it was really just going to be something simple. And I would say that the content of the book as it is now, let's just say that the first draft was about 20,000 words and the final book sits at about 40,000+ words. So yeah. Huge shift from what I thought the book was initially going to be.
And what was the writing process like for you? What excited you? What terrified you? What was your sort of guide as you're doing this new book?
The biggest thing for me was to not write it in a very medical textbook way, because I did just finish like 4 years of clinical practice, a lot of reading journals. And before that, I did a lot of, and then I also did this Master's of Public Health, where for a period of time, I was writing scientific abstracts. So all that language, and I would say my writing form was very academic, very sterile. And now I wanted to write something for the general person. And I thought, how am I going to do this in more of a storytelling way? My Malaysian self, let that shine through and really not make it clinical, but still deliver the information accurately. That was the thing I was actually struggling quite a bit with. And the other thing was I started doing the postpartum doula training because that's where I'm at now. I finally found that pivot away from clinical work, but still using a lot of my medical background. And the training actually at one point influenced my edits quite a bit because I wasn't sure, how would I put it? Like the writing process at one point, I started to doubt my message. And I actually had to take a break from writing for a bit to recalibrate and tell myself, okay, what do I actually want with this book? Yeah. And what do I want for the people who are reading it? And once I kind of got over that hurdle, then it became easier to write.
Oh, I lost you for a second.
Yeah, sorry. That was
a glitch. All right, we're back. I think writing a book is so more difficult than people know. I know most people think, yeah, writing a book seems hard, but it's not the one word after the other that's hard. It's these beliefs and doubts that come up. Even as an expert, so you're a doctor, there's high expectations to just getting into medical school and then becoming a doctor and practicing, not only expectations of our family, but the expectations we put on ourselves, how good something has to be. And so this notion of perfectionism gets a deep root in us, right?
Absolutely.
So what's your biggest fear? Like at the time of this recording, your book is just getting ready to go live and it's going to be out by this time this recording's out. What's giving you the most fear at the moment? What's the thing that's going on with you?
That's a very deep question because a lot of fears have come up. I'm really excited, but also really fearful of how well the book can do. And of course, if the book doesn't do well, I can hide behind that personally, I feel. But if the book is really successful, I'm afraid of what's to come after that, be it good or bad. I don't know what to expect and I don't know if I can handle whatever attention comes with that. And I definitely am afraid of people just tearing me down, just be like, oh, you're not a doctor anymore. So, you know, you're not a real doctor anymore. Or how can you claim to write this? Like you've never had obstetrics background because if I didn't quit medicine, I would have done geriatric medicine for elderly health was where my passion lied or the interest developed throughout my years in medicine. So I am afraid people will come at me with those accusations. And I don't know how I would defend myself or defend the book, if that's even the correct word, defend, because I would jump back to the mindset of, the only way I know how, okay, as a doctor, I'm getting all this feedback from my patients and from my colleagues, and I really have to approach it from that health professional way. But I know I don't have to do it that way now because I'm not practicing anymore. And it's a different world with, I guess, speaking, with business, with on authorship and publishing. So that's something I'll have to figure out.
Yeah. Well, let's try to figure out here together, because people listening are probably having the same fear. But what if I put it out there and people don't like it, or they start leaving bad reviews, or my peers start to say things, or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
So I tell people, look, remember that people, the internet peoples that are hanging out there, they're triggered by your success. Their doubt of themselves gets triggered. So they start to go after other people. Right? It's a reflection of the inner feeling that they have. Rather than celebrating you, they try to tear you down. Those people, the only way to deal with them is to ignore them. That's it. You don't address them. You don't comment on them. There's some people that say, oh yeah, go in there. And I just say, tell me more. I don't like that, because I don't want to give negative people my energy. Let's say there's 50 reviews out there, 100 reviews, and 95 of them are just glowing and amazing. And a few are like, oh, this is okay. And then a couple are like scathing. Could there be truth? There could be, but more than likely they're out there to just attack. And if you were in person, they would probably be docile and never say a word to you, but they feel empowered to be bold without any repercussions for themselves, because nothing happens to them when they leave a bad review. Nothing. It's so free and easy. So I just encourage people, don't even look at reviews, good or bad. Know that they're there. Know that getting them is important, because it helps people know that this is valuable, but what people say isn't. And I want to share this for me personally, Crystal, because it's what knocked me out of rhythm. And I'm going to share personally two ways I handled it. One well and one poor, because I don't want you to think you're somehow excluded. If you're going to be an author, this is what it feels like.
Yep.
So don't take it away, because that would be not true. But realize that there are ways to handle it that take the pressure off you to have to do something. Their reaction isn't a cause for you to take
like that.
When I first started, when I wrote my first book, and it was going great, I was at 49 reviews, somewhere around 50, 52, someone led a 2-star review. And it was because somehow I updated the book to the Amazon and it was the wrong version. It had lots of typos. It was a mistake and I wanted to correct it, but it was based on the fact that someone had watched a review on YouTube from Pat Flynn about my book and all the great things about it. And I was blown away because I wasn't expecting that. But the comment shut me down. Okay, I'm not talking about this. I'm not asking for reviews anymore, even though I changed it and fixed it. That's because I let that person's thoughts, feelings, whatever, keep me from moving forward. And I wish I would know. The second time it happened to me is when I did my TED Talk. Someone, and more than one person, and I always think it's a teacher because it's about teaching. It's a good teacher, great. Was like, I can't believe this person. I would never listen to this person. They don't even know how to use an adverb. And I was like, that's this person who's just jealous that they're not doing something. And I was going to type something. I think I did type something not very nice, which is, when you finish your TED Talk, why don't you just show up back here and let us know and let us critique and judge you. But I was like, I think I put it there and I took it down, but I was like, that's not very nice, Asul. And I'm like, oh, they're triggering me. And I was like, I know I made mistakes. I was on a stage and I had no rehearsal. I understand. But the point is the message, not me, how well I said it. It's, did you get the message? And the whole message of the TED Talk was listening. And I was like, oh, they weren't listening. It's not my fault. They weren't listening. This is how their kids probably feel in their classrooms. So I took it down. And what happened was somebody in the YouTube audience and reviewer said, why don't you, you're missing the point of the message. They all went after that person and basically shut them down. They disappeared. And I thought, that's awesome. I didn't have to do anything. And in fact, I probably should never go in there to be bothered by it. But it took so much time and energy and kept me from doing what I was there to do, which is help people.
Yeah.
So just, I want to encourage you, Crystal, that trust that the 95% of the people who are there are going to appreciate you and thank you for doing something for them. And the person driving by shouting out the window doesn't need your attention at all.
Actually, that is a great visual for my head right now. And as you were telling me that story, it did remind me of one of the most difficult patient family interaction I had. It was the patient himself it was just a regular work day, but that one family member actually caused a huge ripple effect throughout the entire department. And I had to deal with that night because just so happened I was the one rostered to stay a bit later to, before we hand over to the evening colleague. And I had to walk in there holding a file because I did not want to hit this person. But it helped. And I was so angry and so triggered, but I knew I couldn't lose it. You know, and this was face to face. It's not, at least now I can take a step back, breathe, and be like, let's either ignore this, or if I want to read it and go down that rabbit hole, sure, but I have the choice to step back behind a screen. But at that time, I actually managed it, I think, pretty well, because I ended up telling this person, I said, we are not here to address your anxiety. We're here to address your family members. And I will not prescribe this medication for him just to soothe your worries. Like, I don't know how I came up with that, but I did. And I think that's the beauty of that face-to-face. I want to thank you for telling me that story, because now that I have this screen, it's even, I wouldn't say easier, but I have more power to do that and step back and just assess whether this person is just being like, there's really an issue with the book, or they're just taking it out on me.
Yeah. Somebody might say something. So I want to help you here. So someone might say something about the book that was a doubt or concern of yours. Like, this title reminds me of X, or what this seems like, or that picture, or the way she said, they're going to go after you. And it's going to trigger your already insecure beliefs. See, I did that. I should have changed it. And then you changed it. What happened is you change it, and then someone else goes after the thing you changed. Like, oh my God. So now I thought if I fix this, I wouldn't have this. No, someone else will show up to challenge the thing you thought was better. So you can't please everybody. In fact, the sign of success is that people actually are a little bit disgruntled about some of the things you say, because it's usually about what they feel about themselves. It's not about the book value or anything like that. So you've got to take it with a grain of salt. Otherwise, what will happen is you will be afraid that you somehow are diminished as an expert. Someone will say, there's no citations in here. And you're like, oh my God, I'm terrible. I'm like, this isn't a journal. This isn't a research paper. This is not an academic paper. This is to help mothers. So yes, of course, they're not. So you're going to be bombarded with these kind of things, and I want you to prepare yourself. One of my CEOs I worked for in the past was a double black belt in Aikido. And he said, what's amazing about Aikido, it is an offensive art that is made, that your power comes from the offensive attack from somebody else. You use their momentum towards the direction they're going to help them continue in the direction they wanted to go. If they want to be negative, just let them be negative on their own. Don't entertain them. Don't try to stop them from doing it. So Aikido is not about stopping you. Aikido is from letting your own energy pass through. So if you want to be negative, keep going. Be negative. Go on to be negative, but not near me. So by not addressing them, you just let them drift away. So I hope that helps everyone listening, that reviews can be the death of an author. I've even seen people take books down. They worked really hard. They spent a lot of money publishing, and someone attacked them and they took it down. I'm like, no, you have to stand your ground, because if these people were standing in front of you, if they would be like this, more than likely they would never be like this, right?
That is true. I have to agree with that part.
So if they're sitting, let's say you're sitting... Let's use the drive-by method where you're at a garage sale, you have these lovely things you're selling, and people are like, oh, these are so great. I need this. This is so grateful. And then that person drives by the car. This is terrible junk. What do they know? They don't care. They're not there to get anything. They just want to yell obscenities or do things like this. So I don't know why people are like that, but just trust that it has nothing to do with you. It's all about them.
Yeah. Awesome. That, I think, do you think as well, that's more of me practicing, I guess, positive affirmations for myself? Constantly just reminding myself of my success, my skill.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how you defend imposter syndrome. I even recommend that you make a list on in front of your computer or on a little post-it of your successes. I am a doctor, which means I went to medical school. I graduated. I practice. I am a mom. I've given birth to two kids, one while writing this book, raising the other one. Give yourself some confidence about what you're doing. I'm one of the very small percentage of doctors who decided to become an entrepreneur. I am traveling the world with my spouse and yet still managing. Give yourself all these praises. So when it comes, you're like, oh, you know what?
Your little comment. I love that. That'll be my little homework tonight. I'm sure of it. Yeah. It does remind me, in our book coaching session, the first thing you asked our group to do was to write that I am an author. And I still have that piece of paper on my wall. So That helped
that's
a lot.
Awesome. I do that. Mine's the only post-it that sits on my desk permanently is I am an author. It's sitting here. Like I showed you guys, it just sits here. Yeah. And that attack from people is what authorship feels like. Because if you're going to be a leader and stand up, somebody will criticize your leadership and they think they should do it differently. Like, hey, if you want to do it, you jump up and go lead. Fine. But yeah. I'm leading here. And it takes a little extra confidence and you muster it up from within. But that list of accomplishments and like amazing things of that you've done and who you are will help you get past one or two of those little negative comments, right? Yeah. And you don't know where they're coming from. So like what I'm helping authors become speakers, which is a huge shift because now you're like, oh, I'm not behind the page. Now I got to get in front of people.
Yes.
Not every talk you give will be perfect. Not every audience is ready for your talk. But what I realize is your talk's really important. That's why you're there. So think about that. Think about the one or two people sitting there going, gosh, this is right. And you're shifting them. Too much is worried about, am I shifting everybody? No, your job is to be there present. Your book's there for somebody, your message. And there's somebody struggling with this. Like, how do I integrate this? How do I continue to be a, quote, good daughter to my family and a good spouse to my partner and yet blend these cultures and still practice something that's important to me? That's really hard. Who's going to help them? Both families have a competing interest. Who's going to help them? You are. You're going to show up and help them. And finally, they'll have a guide, somebody they can trust, someone they can go to. They don't need a doctor. They would have gone to the doctor. The doctor doesn't know, but you do.
That is true. That is true. It did something you mentioned about that one or two person in the crowd might like my talk or my topic might be the thing they need to hear was actually what happened last year. I went back to my medical school in Malaysia to talk about how medicine isn't for everyone and how to quit or how I did it.
Yeah.
And there were two women or fellow doctors who actually came to me after that saying, everything you said up there was exactly how I felt. And they said, they're so glad that they don't feel alone, that they weren't the only ones feeling that way about wanting to leave medicine or pivot. So that made me feel really happy. I'm like, oh, I'm so glad that at least you feel like you're not alone in this journey.
Yeah.
So, I think I really need to do a lot of reminding myself of the good things and good qualities that I have, which I think, like you said, a lot of experts just don't always do that enough for ourselves.
Yeah. The curse of the expert is you have a lot of high expectations and that you expect everything to be perfect and take action. What you've done is dabble in a place where you're not comfortable, like becoming an author, becoming a force, a leader. And that's difficult because they don't prepare that for you in medical school. It's not something you're taught. So there are people out there thinking, gosh, if I could talk about this if I just had more education. They're having the same problem, just the other direction. No one's going to listen to me because I'm not a doctor. You're thinking, no one's going to listen to me because I'm not a doctor anymore. Like all of those thoughts are just thoughts. You get to claim your expertise and your authority by saying, look, I have something to say and I'm standing up to say it. And the people that say it over and over again, once their self is convinced, other people will listen. I don't have a coaching certificate. I am the least likely person to be a book coach. I'm dyslexic. I failed freshman English at UCLA. Like I am not the best guide, but my gifts lie outside of being grammar coach or a editor. My gift lies in helping pull out the stories within people that are going to make a difference in the author's life and the lives of the people they serve. That's my gift. So you just have to find your lane because there are plenty of editors and book coaches out there that would think what I'm doing is sacrilegious. I don't make people do outlines. I make them do it so different. It's not anything academic in any way, shape, or form. It starts to feel like, are we going to write this book? We're doing these drawings and what is he doing?
I have to say, I did feel that way the first few sessions with our book coaching. I was like, when are we going to get started again?
Yeah. People are like, can we start? I'm like, I know you don't need this now, becoming confident and getting rid of imposter syndrome and dealing with these. But if we don't deal with this, it's what's going to keep you from writing the book. And so people are like, okay, I don't know. I don't feel that way now. I know, but you will. It'll come. If it's not now, it's when you're writing. If it's not when you're writing, it's when you're editing. If it's not when you're editing, it's when it's marketing. It's going to show up for you. But most people don't realize that a book has such a power on an influence on an author's life because of the shift that happens within them. So let's move there. What shift has happened in you, transformation from writing a book?
Oh gosh, there was something that's actually been on my mind was I considered this whole, from the day we first spoke and I decided to do the book coaching with you, it's been a self-development journey, truly, because the questions you've asked during the coaching and just even right now going through the stage of me, I guess I want to be more sure of myself, my message, my values, my priorities. It's a lot of self and professional development that I did not expect to come out of, I guess, something as simple as in when we say it, oh, I'm writing a book, full stop. The behind the scenes is, oh, it's, I don't know, it's like chasing something in the ocean when there's a storm coming and you're just, and I have this tiny little boat that I don't even know how to sail. That's right. How I feel. I think I've grown a lot, even in just my day-to-day, because having to write while my husband is very busy with the army, and last year he deployed, and having my two-year-old go through that terrible twos, they call it, while he was deploying, and having our baby at the time was maybe four months or 5 months old. I don't know how I did it. Writing the book helped keep me sane as well, because it gave me that purpose, but also then finding the time to write the book and staying true to my message while going through all that emotional chaos. It's a huge transformation, Azul. Yeah. So this one book has brought a huge change personally, professionally, even my happiness overall, and especially coming from that level of high professional background, fully to stay at home wife and then stay at home mom, my ego got bruised very hard along the way. So this has helped repair it a bit, but it's also humbled me because I would say my ego has morphed. It's not as arrogant. Oh, I'm a doctor. Oh, you should listen to me. It's more humble. It's more willing to listen. And my kids have definitely taught me that a lot, because having to communicate with them or talking to them, like being they being my main people to talk to, it's not easy to talk to 2 and 3 year olds.
Yeah.
It's been a wonderful journey.
Thank you so much for saying that. And I'm glad that it's been a transformation. That's what we do here, Authors Who Lead. The first call when I talked to you, I always said this is gonna be a transformative process. You're like, oh, okay. When do we start writing?
I did doubt you. I definitely remember that call. I was like, really? Are you trying to sell me something else other than like a book draft by the end of this 6 month program?
Yeah. So. I want them to know that if they are open to it, this process can really transform them. And I was talking to Pat Flynn today, right before this interview, and it was like therapy. It was like transformative process for me.
Yes.
That I can't even explain totally, but I know it shifted me inside. For anyone out there listening, Crystal, who's thinking about a new book or has even tried, but aren't certain, what advice would you give them?
I think regardless of whether you want to publish or not, just write and allow that writing process to be, if it's therapy that you think you need or some kind of just self exploration journey, I would think. And for me, this was also like a exploration of my heritage, because I had to go and do some more reading, talk to people. And I guess, because I think when people think writing is just to sit down and write, but writing involves reading a lot and talking and connecting and networking for you to then come up with, besides facts and stuff, but also how you form your opinions or, yeah. So I think it's to allow that process to be more than just sitting down and writing, to let it take you on that journey. Even if you don't publish, I think the journey is worth going through. Although it's easier for me to say now, because I have this book coming out in a couple of months. Yeah. But I think as well, the good thing is, I remember you told me done is better than perfect, something like that. And if you're writing and that's just a draft, just write it. And then you can hand that off to someone to help you refine it if that's the way that you want to go to what's getting published.
Yeah, that's great advice. Crystal, this has been awesome. I hope if you're a mom or expecting to have a child and you're from a place of wanting to learn about this special process, The Postpartum 30 is going to be available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere you buy books. And where would they go to reach out to you, Crystal, if they want to learn more about what you're
doing? The best would be my website. It's www.mamaswingwoman.com. And I'm also on Instagram, mostly on Instagram is where I'm at.
Great. Mama's Wing Woman. I love it. I saw that. I was like, that's amazing. Fantastic. Thank you again for being here. It's been a pleasure to have you here, Dr. Lau. And thank you for being brave and vulnerable, even on the show, to help people understand how powerful writing a book can be for them.
Thank you so much again.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Authors Who Lead. I'm Asul Taronis. We appreciate you. Please subscribe so you can get the notification that we have new episodes every week, and go to authorswholead.com to learn about our show notes and all of our backlists of amazing authors we've interviewed since the beginning of this podcast. Thank you and have an amazing day.